Hello and welcome to Football and Grits, the Athletics SEC football podcast. It's Thursday, January 7th. And when it's Thursday, you know you can hear from me, David Ubbin, and my co-host, Mitch Light, one of our stellar college football editors here at The Athletic. If you're not a subscriber to The Athletic, you should change that. TheAthletic.com/grits, you can do that there. And you can read all of our work. And Mitch, you helped edit it. You write every now and then for us. It's coaching carousel season, officially. And these are always interesting because every coaching carousel decision is self-contained. It's its own animal. Vanderbilt's search is different from Auburn's search, is different from Tennessee's possible search, South Carolina's search. They're all very different. But when you zoom out from a 30,000-foot level, some trend lines start to emerge. Mitch, you've done some research for us. What do we need to know about the SEC's coaching carousel?
Yeah, what prompted this research was thinking about sort of the Auburn hire. And You mentioned the three openings, and I think all three of those schools, or each of those schools, kind of swim in different waters when they're searching for a coach. Now, South Carolina is interesting because they have been fortunate enough in the past 30 years to hire two of the most high-profile, most successful coaches in college football, in Lou Holtz and Steve Spurrier. Now, they were fortunate because they had openings when those coaches were interested, or I mean were available, but there was enough about South Carolina for those coaches to take make the leap. So those fans may have been spoiled throughout the years. But Auburn's fans want the home run, the big sexy name, the going to win a national championship in year two.
Bama killer.
Yes, exactly. South Carolina probably thinks they're swimming closer to those waters based on their expectations of their fan base and some hires they've made, but more of a middle of the pack. And then Vanderbilt's more, and I've made this point many times, I thought Vanderbilt was in a great situation this year because there was such an attractive pool of that, you know, either G5 coaches or coordinators. So so the point was, like, how often do coaches, to SEC schools, or even Power 5 schools, but specifically SEC schools, make that home run hire, steal away that successful Power 5 coach?
And we should say this is a home run hire when the hire is made.
Yes, because we don't know how things, I mean, that's the cap. Every coaching discussion needs to lead with, you know, Jim Harbaugh at Michigan, Scott Frost at Nebraska, you know, Chip Kelly at UCLA, even though maybe they are slowly starting to turn it around there.
And the idea, too, you know, that works both ways. The, you know, Ed Orgeron, and then, of course, the, you know, I remember even Bob Stoops getting hired away as a never been a head coach before, gets the Oklahoma job, wins national championship in year two. Like,
yeah,
it's wild.
And he really spoiled it for coaches everywhere. He was the first one. Before, it used to be like Phil Fulmer, Tom Osborne. Give these guys time. Now, Bob Stoops comes in and wins it in year two, and then, you know, every fan base, every athletic department.
He did it.
So, okay, so over the last 10 years, there have been 25 coaches hired in the SEC. You know the answer to this, but I guess my trivia question would be, how many of those 25 hires were existing, standing Power 5 head coaches?
Now's the time for our listeners to hit pause.
I told you the number. Did that surprise you?
I would have thought higher.
And the answer is four. Mike Leach, 2020, making the leap from Washington State to Mississippi State. 2018, Dan Mullen from Mississippi State to Florida. Jimbo Fisher, Florida State to Texas A&M. Mm-hmm. In 2013, Brett Bielema from Wisconsin to Arkansas. Mm-hmm. Nine of those 25 coaches were Group of Five head coaches. So that's the highest category. This one's interesting, and I wonder if it's going to change. But eight of the 25 were Power 5 coordinators. Seven were defensive coordinators, and only one was an offensive coordinator, and that was Joe Moore.
In the next decade, we're not going to see a trend line shift harder than that one.
Except that as more head coaches become offensive head coaches, they're almost their own coordinator, or their coordinator doesn't call plays, so they might not be as attractive as a head coach. So Joe Moorhead is the only offensive coordinator, P5 offensive coordinator. Then we had two position coaches hired, Power 5 position coaches, Shane Beamer, who was the assistant head coach and tight ends coach at South Carolina, at Oklahoma before going to South Carolina, and then Sam Pittman was the offensive line coach at Arkansas, going Georgia to Arkansas, and then two were kind of their own category. Matt Luke was hired as an interim for a full year and then hired full-time, although that didn't last long, and then Ed Orgeron was an interim for three or four games and then hired full-time. So to summarize, 25 coaching hires in the last 10 years, only four were standing head coaches at other Power 5 schools.
I am not a math person, which, you know, I think I just gave myself away calling it a math person, but that's around 15%, isn't it? I would have guessed at 16%. Least a quarter.
You really are not a math person.
I would have guessed around a quarter. But I think it's an interesting thing to look at, because, you know, I think when you look at the SEC coaching carousel, like you said, it's complicated. And I would have guessed in the last 10 years that 25 coaching hires, the number of programs is sort of a complicated number. You can define that in a number of ways with the expansion. I would have guessed more than 2.5 openings every year. I mean, this is the year where everyone said, it's not going to be a coaching carousel. I said that. You know, I don't know where you were on that, but I thought it was going to be slower. We're already at 3, which means in the last decade, you're past the median. You may be sitting at 4 not too long, and depending on 40, you might get to 5. That's entirely possible. And that's sort of a different deal.
I'll go over the numbers real quick. 2012, there were 2. 2013, 4. It's obviously cyclical. If you've got a lot, one year, you're not going to have. 2014, 1. 2015, 1. 2016, 3. 2017, 1. 2018 was a fun one. 6. then 2019, 0. 2020, 4. 2021, 3. And part of the lack of, you know, big name existing Power 5, Alabama has had 0 hires over the stretch. Auburn has had 1. I'm going the top. Georgia has had 1. Now they went with the coordinator. Florida has had, I guess they've had a couple. They've had McElwain. So, you know, not saying that Alabama would definitely hire an existing head coach, but the fact that the premier program in the league has not made a hire, you know, I mean, that would only change the number by 1. So I don't know if that made much sense.
And you never know. I mean, you know, I guess you could say Sark is basically a head coach, but Texas, a top, you know, 5-10 job probably in college football, and they hire a coordinator. Granted, a sought-after coordinator, but a coordinator nonetheless. When you look at the churn in the SEC, you know, you mentioned that Bob Stoops is one of the first, and I think that people are never more impatient. But in the SEC, you have so many programs that believe they should be competing for titles. There's not a lot of programs that are going to say, we got to 8-4 this year. That's great. We want to get to a bowl game every year. We want to get to 8-4 from time to time. And, you know, if we can win our division, you know, once a recruiting cycle or be in the mix, that's great. There aren't very many of those programs in the SEC. Most of the programs in the SEC are, we should never be in a bowl. We should never win fewer than 8 games. We should be competing for the division every single year. We should be in the playoff, you know, once or twice recruiting cycle. That's more the norm in the SEC. And simple math as well as reality says you can't do that. So I guess my question is that as we've gotten the quick trigger, is it okay for programs to give up on a coach in year 2, Chad Morris, year 3, year 4, when you say, this guy can probably win here. This guy can probably go, you know, win 6-8 games. I mean, Gus Malzahn was there for a long time, but that was one of his issues, is he never had a losing season, but people lost their belief that he could get Auburn into the playoff. When you feel like this is not the guy that's going to turn us into Alabama, is it fair to punt on a coach?
Yes, I think it is. And aside from the money, which is another topic, but I think, and I've always been one from, you know, I think I have a good sense on programs' expectations and history. I'm a historian of the sport, and I can say, okay, that program that has been this good or that bad over the last three or four decades. But I've always been one from the outside looking in. Like, it's hard to really know what is going on. If you've got a competent athletic director, which is not always the case, and competent leadership, like, who am I to tell you what to do? Like, if you've determined that this guy just is not going to get it done, go ahead and pull the plug. Don't get him back for his third or fourth year just because that's the perceived right thing to do. Like, I'll give an example, and this is one of the programs that doesn't have high expectations. But Vanderbilt in the mid-90s hired Rod Dauhauer away from the NFL. And he was a long time NFL. He'd coached at Stanford, but I was close to the program back then. And it was clear after 1 year, but it was painfully clear after 2 years that this guy was not going to work out. This wasn't a took over a tough situation, give him time. So Todd Turner, the athletic director, fired him after 2 years. No one thought it was a raw deal. 10 years later, 8 years later, they hired Bobby Johnson. Goes 2-10, 2-10. But everyone knew that Bobby Johnson knew what he was doing. He was on the right track. He was, you know, he'd been proven head coach. So that's an example where from the outside looking in, and I know this was a different era, people are like, how could they fire Rod Dauer after 2 years? You got to give him time. Well, those close to the program, athletic director, knew he just was not going to get it done. Same situation a decade later. You had a coach who ended up being a little bit more successful. Same thing at Arkansas. Like, I don't know. I wasn't there every day with Chad Morris, but it seems like it just wasn't working out. They were regressing. So they made the decision that this is not the guy. So why should he be back for a third year? Because every year he's back, it's just we're digging a hole that's even deeper. So sure, there are cases where, you know, whether it's at Auburn or some of these schools with too many cooks in the kitchen, they make a hasty decision. But for the most part, I'm fine with schools making the decision they think is in their best interest.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know, I look at Kirk Ferentz at Iowa, and I look at Pat Fitzgerald at Northwestern. Guys that aren't sniffing the playoff very often. I mean, Iowa almost won the Big Ten that 1 year with when Michigan State went to the playoff. Shout out to LJ Scott. That doesn't really exist in the SEC. And my question to you is, when you look at it, you know, I grew up in SEC country. I've followed SEC football for a long time. Just, you know, I wouldn't call myself a historian, but when you look at the outsized expectations in the SEC, which I think are fair to call it that, why do you think that is? It feels like every school is sort of searching for the glory years in perpetuity and living in ignorance of the larger history of the program that says you probably can't do that for, you know, ever, or for, you know, you can't just live in the playoff or live in 9-3 floor land. Why do you think that is? Is it just literally fueled by the passion, or, you know, because Big Ten fans are passionate too, but why do you feel like the expectations in the SEC, they seem like they're outsized on every single campus relative to reality based on history almost everywhere? And I don't know that I have a good answer of why that is.
Yeah, I think it's partly the passion, and I think I'm kind of thinking this through right now. I think every program in the SEC has had some sort of peak slash glory era, glory period in the past 20 years that their fans and schools say, we have done it. Missouri won two SEC East titles. James Franklin won 18 games in 2 years at Vanderbilt, which is unbelievable. South Carolina won an SEC East title, then won 11 great games 3 years in a row. Mississippi State was ranked number one in the nation for 3 or 4 weeks. Ole Miss has been in the top 10. Arkansas has won multiple SEC West titles. Every program,
they won a national championship only 56 some years ago.
Yeah. Every program has experienced, relative to their history, almost reached that peak. So they say, why can't we do that more consistently? Why can't we? Or their rival is doing what they want to do. So it's like, we did this X amount of years ago. Our rival's doing it now. We should be doing what they're doing.
It is interesting, you know, especially, you know, living in Tennessee now, sort of being engrossed in this program constantly. I do feel bad for Tennessee fans because you mentioned the rival. They look to their left. They see Alabama just running the sport. They look to their right. They see Florida beating their heads in every year and then going and playing in SEC championship games. And they look at Georgia and they see a program that is probably the best suited to unseat Alabama as the kings of the SEC. They're right there recruiting top 1, 2, 3 recruiting classes every single year. I feel bad for them, and I think I don't know if there's any program that's living a more tortured existence in terms of just looking at their one-time peers and looking way up at them at the moment. But it's just the SEC is so interesting, and it plays out in so many different areas and in so many different ways. We see it on the recruiting trail. We see it in on the field on Saturdays. But I think the lack of patience and the decision-making in the coaching carousel is really interesting, and especially that's the time of year right now. I don't think that, you know, I think when people talk about Tennessee's program and the issues that have prevented them from winning, I wrote a little bit about this earlier this week. I think the churn hasn't helped, but you look back at all those things, all the firings that they have had to make, none of those were bad decisions. Like Lane Kiffin, that's out of your control. USC opens up, there was nothing you could do.
That's bad luck.
Nothing you could do.
Yeah.
Derek Dooley.
Was a bad hire.
Yeah, bad hire. You gave him 3 years. No one, especially in hindsight, is going to say you can't do that. Butch Jones, the bottom fell out. You hear enough about the program that was not a healthy program. Jeremy Pruitt is interesting. It's tough to know. Is Jeremy Pruitt the guy that's going to win SEC championships at Tennessee? I don't know. Probably not, but maybe. I don't know. I think there's a decent case for year four. I don't think that you're dealing with a disaster. I don't think that you're dealing with, you know, a likely breakthrough year. I think it's going to take some time for them to be what they still want to be. If it's going to be Jeremy Pruitt, I don't know that that's going to happen next year. So I don't know that the impatience is a wrong thing, but it's just interesting to me.
It's,
I think
it's like a self-fulfilling prophecy. Like, it's, we've created this culture that if you're not winning within 3 years, like the Butch Jones, like that was a good hire. He was Central Michigan, Cincinnati. He's a good coach. Now, I think I don't pretend to be that inside that program. From the outside looking in, it seemed to me Butch Jones just kind of got caught up in everything, and then, you know, started spewing all his cliches and buying.
Some coaches can deal with the fishbowl
better than others. Like, I think Butch Jones will do really well at Arkansas State. He almost took the Colorado job. He probably would have done well at Colorado because he's a good coach. He just couldn't handle all that, like you said, the fishbowl. So I think we've created this culture. Everyone has created the culture. Fans, media, schools, that if you're at year three and you're at a school like Tennessee or wherever and you're not winning, then the pressure becomes so great, and then you almost get to the point of no return. Like, that's where we almost are with Jeremy Pruitt. It's just like, well, I mean, look at what we've done. It's 3 years, and we've fired Butch Jones in 3 years, Derek Dooley in 3 years. Why is this guy back? And then there becomes so much, assuming he comes back, so much pressure, so much scrutiny in year four. It's just a different era than it was 10, 15 years ago, where that the pressure is, it went from year five to year three is sort of now that line of demarcation.
Despite the fact that I, all of us really should aspire to one day be fired football coaches.
Yes.
You know, the coaches would say that this is bad for the sport, I'm sure. It's, well, makes life harder on them. Big picture, that impatience, we see it some places, we see it good for the sport, bad for the sport.
Oh, I think it's bad for the sport. I mean, I hope I'm not contradicting myself, because earlier I said, who am I to tell a school not to, you know, it's just each place is different. Each situation is different. But in general, I think it's bad for the sport. Now, we have not talked money yet because we're just kind of talking about firing and hiring on merit. It's not good for the sport with the current culture and the climate of the players not being paid, no matter where you sit on it. Like, if you're the most diehard, they're student athletes, they're getting an education for free, that's fine. You still can't reconcile the fact that these schools are paying so much money in buyouts. So I think that's where the culture and where we are with firing coaches so much and paying so much money to coaches who aren't coaching. And now the salaries are so high for staffs, we're paying coordinators millions of dollars, $1 million not to coach. That's unhealthy. aside from the practical reasons why you might fire a coach for lack of performance. So it's not ruining the sport, I don't think, but it's not good for college football that there's so much turnover.
Yeah, I think it would probably depend on your perspective. I think as just a fan, it makes things more interesting.
Yeah.
So you might say it's good. The economics, you're definitely right, not good for the sport. And I also think it's interesting, you look at I've said this a few times, but the most lopsided rivalry in sports is agents versus athletic directors. And I don't know why athletic directors don't seem to be able to tip the balance a little bit on that. So they're not backed into these insane contracts and giving out these extensions for, you know, having a player got, you know, one of our star quarterback got a 94 on his geography exam. Here's another 3 years on your deal. Like, it's like, come on now, guys. Like, again, Andy Staples wrote about this. We mentioned it today. If you're, you know, the three questions you have to ask for, you give yourself or give your coach an extension. You should go read it. If you're not a subscriber to The Athletic, you can check that out. But I've always just said, if somebody's trying to get your coach or your coach has done something truly remarkable, you should probably extend him or give him some more money. There's no other reason to do that. And we've seen it time and time and time again. Oh, we got to give this guy a 12-year deal. We got to double his salary right now because, you know, I don't know, they won the bowl game. It's like, okay.
What athletic directors need to do is kind of sign some pact of truth where where if I have a coach, I can call five athletic directors at different schools and they have to be honest and say, if I fired my coach today, would you hire them? And if none of them say yes, then there's no reason to give an extension. I want to go back to something you said about Ferentz and Fitzgerald. Like, that longevity is great. They've been successful. They've been great for their programs. I bet there's a bunch of Iowa fans who, like, there's something exciting about having a new coach. Like,
yeah,
it's boring to have the same coach for 20 years. He's won. He's done. He's had some ebbs and flows. But there's, like, a renewed energy around a program to have a good coach. So, like, I think, you know, anything over, like, 7-8 years is a long time. Even if you're – unless, obviously, you're Nick Saban or you're winning at a really high level. Just – there's so much pressure on both sides around programs. It's just like sometimes after 7-8 years, hey, thanks a lot. We're going in a different direction. It's time for a divorce, and all parties can agree to that.
Yeah. Well, it's going to be interesting. What are we at right now? Marshall and Boise, still the only openings. Tennessee and Florida, staring at the carousel.
Yeah, but hold on. Let's go back to Marshall because that was – Auburn's jealous about that, about how that was
handled. Makes me, when I saw that, I was like, governor. Am I missing something here? Am I missing something? Like, I didn't understand that. Anytime you, regardless of anything that happened, you know, unless it's like off the field stuff, anytime you fire the coach of the year, that's never going to play well nationally. You know, even if there's dynamics, I'm not sure what was happening at Marshall.
I didn't read all the stories. Something with the governor. I mean, the governor tried to get him out a couple of years ago. I mean,
college football. Baby.
Again, Auburn's jealous about the politics involved with that mess,
yeah,
right there.
Yeah,
but you mentioned, I mean, the two of the better, you know, Boise clearly the best job in its conference, and Marshall's probably the best. Which best job in Conference USA? I don't know. It's one of them.
I'd have to look.
Geography's probably not great. You could say FAU or FIU for geographical reasons, or, you know, UAB or something like that. But as far as tradition and interest in your program locally,
I'm a big North Texas is a huge sleeper guy, and I've never understood why they haven't been able to just set fire to everything, catching all, you know, getting, there's so much talent in the DFW area. Getting the guys that get overlooked and then collecting all of the, like, big-time Power 5 bounce back from the DFW area. I've never understood why you can't build the next Boise in North Texas. But anyway, we'll save that for our CUSA podcast.
I'm looking forward
Mitch,
to it.
Thank you for joining me on this spin on the coaching carousel. It's been, you know, the SEC, you never know. If I was a betting man, I don't think the carousel is done spinning in the SEC, but we will see. If you guys are not subscribers to this show, you should change that. You can have every episode every weekday delivered directly to your device from whatever podcast provider you choose. And, of course, if you're not a subscriber to The Athletic, You should change that. TheAthletic.com/grits. You can read all of our coverage of the carousel, and it's going to be an interesting offseason. Plenty of new dynamics from name, image, likeness to transfer portal season to immediate eligibility. It's going to be quite a year. And, you know, there's still a pandemic raging, so we'll see how that goes. Thank you for Mitch Light. I am David Ubbin. This has been the Thursday edition of Football and Grits, the Athletics SEC podcast. We'll be back again tomorrow. Thanks for tuning in.